waste, the barren waste, without the taste of water. Cool water. Old Ann and I, with throats burned dry and souls that cry for water. Cool, clear water. Dan, can you see that big green tree where the water's running free and it's waiting there for you? Nights are cool and I'm a fool. Each star's a pool of water. Cool water. But with the dawn I'll wake and yawn and carry on to water. Water. Cool, clear water. Moving Dan, don't you listen to him, Dan. He's a devil, not a man, and he spreads the burning sands with water.
Water.
Dan, can you see that big green tree where the water's running free and he's waiting there for you and me?
You're listening to 90.1 FM People Powered Community Radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. My name is Ron Topi, and this is your North State Water Report. The North State Water Report is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Friends of the Arts, your state local partner with the California Arts Council. Since 2001, Friends of the Arts has been creating economic opportunity by producing and supporting events and publishing a bi-monthly arts and culture newsletter. Stay in the know or have your event listed with friendsof.art. That's friendsof.art. And by Tires Plus, complete auto repair. The technicians at Tires Plus provide year-round services and maintenance for your vehicle, including scheduled maintenance, oil changes, AC and cooling systems, powder coating, and engine repair, along with Cooper, Michelin, and all types of ag tires. Located at 624 Broadway Street, Tires Plus Complete Auto Repair can be reached at 530-342-8338 or at tirespluschico.com. And also on Facebook. And you're caught up with our underwriters for the show tonight. And you're listening to the North State Water Report, our monthly show here on KZFR, keeping you up to date with what's going on with all our water problems and different projects going on around the state. On tonight's show, I'll be speaking with Ron Stork, Jane Dorman, and Keiko Mertz from Friends of the River. But first, I want to go over some highlights in North State Water News. As everyone knows, we had a really wet winter last year, so we went in 2023. We went from empty reservoirs to completely full reservoirs due to those heavy rains and snowpack, and that was brought to an end. Brought to a close one of the most severe drought periods in decades here in California. This past July, for the second year in a row, the Winnemem Wintu, California Department of Fish and Wildlife, and NOAA Fisheries introduced fertilized winter-run Chinook salmon eggs into the McLeod River above Shasta Dam. This is a historic partnership with the Winnemem Tribe and CDFW, and it marks the first time that the Winnemem's Nur, or the Chinook salmon, have hatched in the high waters of the Winnemem Waywacket, also known as the McLeod River, above Shasta Dam, and have been able to swim all the way through to the ocean. The tribe has been carrying a prayer for decades all along the Winnemem Wewakit, continuing their traditional ceremonies along the river, never giving up on their salmon returning. There is also ongoing research into building a swimway around the dam so the salmon can return on their own to spawn above the dam. For the Winnemem, this is a spiritual journey, a commitment to the salmon made long ago by their ancestors. Restoring ecological balance is a key reason for bringing salmon back. And you can find more information about this particular program, project, at IndianCultural.org, that is IndianCultural.org, or by searching CDFW's website at wildlife.ca.gov, or NOAA Fisheries, that's N-O-A-A Fisheries, NOAA Fisheries, and their website is fisheries.noaa.gov. Another long-awaited project along the Klamath River is the Klamath River Dam removal, and that began in the summer of 2023. COPCO 2 was fully removed by the fall of 2023. The remaining three dams, the J.C. Boyle, the COPCO 1, and Iron Gate, are all scheduled for removal starting in the summer or early summer of 2024. Tribal members, researchers, rural residents near the dams, conservationists, and all, you know, everyone in the fishing industry and recreational fishing are all anxiously awaiting to see how this river, dammed for decades, will change. And with it, its fish, wildlife, and human neighbors. Once a river is dammed, is it dammed forever? That's an existential question for rivers, especially in a region where water left in nature is often deemed wasted, or what they call in the rooms of the water controllers here in this state, they call it undeveloped water. You can find more information on the Klamath Dam removal at savecaliforniasalmon.org. At AmericanRivers.org, CalMatters.org, or a quick Google search of Klamath River Dam removal, and you can find all kinds of information if you want to get more caught up on that project. Another very inspiring project that happened this year, program that took place this year, and it was just back in December. The Mountain Maidu tribe, along with CDFW and the U.S. Department of Fish and Wildlife, released a family of seven beavers into Tasman Koyum, also known as Humbug Valley to many of us that live in this area. It's up in Plumas County. This is a historic program. Neither the state nor federal government wildlife agencies have ever had any such program to release beavers into the wild. It's been over 75 years since beavers have been released in any area of California. The area of Humbug Valley, PG&E actually transferred that 2,325 acres of land back to the Maidu in 2019. 2 years ago, the Dixie Fire ravaged much of that area. Ben Cunningham, who is the chairman of the Maidu Summit Consortium, says one main reason why fire ravaged the area is because beavers no longer dam the creek, causing the meadow to become beaver ponds and hold water, keeping the area more fire resilient. In other words, the place really dried up more than it normally would if there were beavers doing their thing up there. Beaver restoration is seen as a big part of a larger effort to combat the impacts of wildfires, climate change, and drought, according to CDFW. And if you want to find more information about this project, you can go to maidusummit.org. That's M-A-I-D-U, maidusummit.org. Or go to the CDFW website, which is wildlife.ca.gov. Some of the major projects that have been, you know, you hear about them on and off in the news. It comes up again. There's a big push for it to happen. Then it gets quiet again. But finally, these two big projects that have been highly controversial for the state of California, in December, the Department of Water Resources and Governor Newsom gave the final green light to two of these major projects, controversial projects in the state. And one of them is Sites Reservoir, and the second one is the Delta Tunnel Project. Sites Reservoir is a planned off-stream reservoir project set to flood approximately 14,000 acres, and it's about 20 miles west of I-5 near the little town of Maxwell, and that's about an hour north of Sacramento on the I-5 corridor. And then there's the Delta Tunnel Project, and that is a planned massive tunnel to take water from the Sacramento-San Joaquin Delta to the south for agricultural and municipal water uses. I'll be talking extensively about these two projects with my guests from Friends of the River as the show goes on here. And I also want to read a little bit from Dan Bacher. Just a couple hours ago, he posted, he posted the other day where he was still waiting for the final, the state hadn't released the final report yet for the Delta trawl, where they trawl for the fall midwater trawl is what they call it, and they survey the different fish in the Delta. And he writes that it's final for the sixth year in a row. No Delta smelt have been collected in the California Department of Fish and Wildlife's fall midwater trawl survey in the Sacramento-San Joaquin River Delta from September through December 2023. The CDFW memo I wrote about on December 22nd, or 27th, did not include the results of December yet. Smelt at one point were the most abundant species in the entire estuary. The Delta smelt has declined to the point that it has become virtually extinct in the wild due to massive water diversions from the Delta to agribusiness and water brokers, combined with toxins, water pollution, and invasive species. And like I said, we're going to be talking a lot more about this subject and the problems in the Delta when I get my guests on the phone. And I'm going to do that right now. But first, while I get them on the phone, we're going to listen to a song by Lila June called Water is Life.
He said it's not a song, it's a way of life. It's a forever thing, it's a message. He said you can say that water is life. Sing it again and again, but will they listen? Are we gonna stand by these words? Are we gonna find a way to change the way we're living, Mother Earth? She feels everything and it hurts. Like the moon, like the body of a woman, she is changing. Can we return to the times when water was alive? When we prayed at her edge and gave thanks for this life? When the water fell from the sky and we drank from her bosom? When the water fell from our eyes and the water fell from our wombs? When it rose up to the surface and we knew every spring? No fear. Competition just a relative to a face. We are people of the sun. We The memories they hold. We sell her by the acre foot. We treat her as our captive. The rivers are undrinkable while the aquifer's extracted. Our food will need water to grow, but do you have to take it all? We try to hold her and control her as we watch our empire fall. He said, it's not a song, it's a way of life, it's a forever thing, it's a message. He said, you can say that water is life, you can sing it again and again, but can you live it?
Watching, hoping, praying that this time it becomes fallen, as done by their grandmothers, grandfathers, long ago, when they spoke with animals, their smoke still floating, touching their morning prayers. Grandfathers, grandmothers, sons and daughters, me, us, the mountains and animals, covered with the morning pollen.
And we're back, and you are listening to the North State Water Report here on KZFR 90.1 FM here in Chico, California. And hopefully, if the phone system is working, I have my guests on the phone, and I have three staff members from Friends of the River, which is Friends of the River is a organization based in Sacramento, and they have been protecting California rivers for over 50 years now. And who I have on air tonight is Ron Stork, who has been on staff since 1987. Ron is Friends of the River's treasured senior policy staff, and that is a title that he prefers. He has worked on flood management, water project advocacy efforts in the American River watershed, in the Central Valley, hydropower relicensing, urban water conservation programs, dam proposals, and wild and scenic river protections. I also have Jan Dorman. Jan is Friends of the River's executive director and board chair. Jan has been involved in Friends of the River since 2012. And has recently retired from a long career as a nonprofit healthcare executive. And lastly, I have Keiko Mertz. Keiko spent her early careers in fish biology, focused on Central Valley Chinook salmon. Her love for wild things moved her to use her skills and voice to drive change. As Friends of the River's policy director, she works to improve water policy and management in the state of California. And so, welcome, Ron, Jan, and Keiko. Are you all there?
We are here. Thank you so much, Ron.
Great. The phone system worked the first time. Anyways, let's kind of get right at it here. Actually, why don't we start off with Maybe I'll turn to you first, Ron, seeing as you are the senior staff. You've been there since 1987. Why don't you give our listeners a little bit of a brief history about Friends of the River and what you all do?
Friends of the River started, as you said, 50 years ago, 1973. And our first campaign and our first effort was trying to save the Stanislaus River from the jaws of New Melones Dam. And it was a heroic struggle. Most people remember one of the highlights where one of our leaders chained himself to a rock and hid doing that, and told the Corps of Engineers that he was prepared to die in order to stop the reservoir from engulfing the Stanislaus River. And, you know, it was a dramatic moment, and for a while it worked. In the end, we lost the Stanislaus. I mean, it's there to be uncovered if somehow or another the reservoir operations changed. But we went on to work on a whole range of river protection issues in the state of California. And, you know, pretty soon we realized, well, we're the river conservation group, statewide river conservation group in California, and we've embraced that role for many decades now, and we have no problems staying busy. How about that for an introduction?
That's great. Yeah, I have no problem finding topics for this show too once a month, because there's so much going on with water here in California, and so many.
So Ron, maybe yes. I can just, this is Jan Dorman, maybe sure. I can just add a little bit to Ron's excellent introduction to FOR. So
sure.
Friends of the River, like many environmental organizations, was born fighting environmentally destructive dams and reservoirs. And like Ron said, we've been doing that for 50 years. I think we're pretty good at it. And it's still needed today. And we're going to be talking about some of those projects. However, all of us are in a different paradigm now with climate change. And we all know fresh water, surface water, whether it's surface water or groundwater, fresh water, the water that falls from the sky, is critical to all terrestrial life, all the plants, you know, that we eat, all the animals, us, everything. And so the important question is, like, why is what FOR does important now? And it's important because how we successfully adapt to climate change, rivers are critical to that success. If we're going to have a state that is sustainable, that can grow food, that can sustain people, that can have climate refugia, that can be a place where we all want to live, our rivers are central to that. So while we've spent 50 years being against things, there's so much that we're for. So we're working for sustainable hydropower, because we're not going to get rid of hydropower. The challenge is to have hydropower that's not environmentally destructive. We're for restoring flows in rivers. We're for multi-benefit flood management. We're for water storage that is sustainable. So the solutions to the challenges we face, they need to be equitable, they need to be practical, we need to be able to afford them, they need to work in the time frame that we have. And so the projects we're going to talk about tonight don't meet those criteria. They're not the solutions that are going to lead to the state of California that we all want to live in. And so that's why we do this work today, which I think is a different reason than why we have done it 50 years ago.
Yeah, thank you so much, Jan. I have one question, and it doesn't need to be a big answer. Maybe even just a yes or no. But I've often cited here on this show, and you know, I've heard from different sources and within some of my research that California is actually the most hydrologically altered landmass on the planet currently. Is that true? Or do you know any, you know, would you have any opinion about that? That
definitions like that are tough. I mean, there are clearly, you know, highly altered river systems in the planet. The Stalin projects in the Soviet Union, you know, just wrecked a bunch of rivers and dried up the Aral Sea. And so, you know, I mean, we're not doing well for the planet, but clearly California has a very, very altered landscape, and including our natural landscapes, particularly the rivers. It's very highly altered. But there's still good parts of it left.
Right. And that's why we're here tonight, to talk about what we're going to do about trying to preserve some of that. So yeah, two of the biggest threats to our you know, mostly the Sacramento River at this point. Two of the most controversial projects recently got greenlighted by Governor Newsom and DWR. And those two projects are Sites Reservoir and the Delta Tunnel Project. So I'd like to start off with talking about Sites Reservoir, because, I mean, this is a brand new thing. And this would, I mean, I'm going to let you all talk about what the impacts are ecologically, financially, why this thing isn't feasible. I've had some shows that have touched on sites in the past, and Jim Brobeck likes to call it a boondoggle because it's already cost, you know, millions and millions of dollars over the last 40 or 50 years since they first started dreaming about building a reservoir over there. So, yeah, what is it? What is it with sites? What is sites, and why has it taken so long for it to get to this point? And it's got its final okay. They can start construction tomorrow if they have the money, essentially. Why is that? And what's being done to prevent this thing from happening?
I think this might be the Ron Sorkin and Keiko show.
Okay.
Let's start back in the day. This project is not exactly a new project. It's been, in the dream of the eyes of some folks, dating back at least to the 1940s. It was in the peripheral canal package that was voted down by the people of California in 1982, which is now 41 years ago. No, 42, let's put it that way. So this project has been around for a while. It's been a deadbeat dam project since its inception. That means that, you know, it's really hard to figure out how to make it cost effective. And essentially the beneficiaries of the project, which are mostly Southern California, finally figured out a way to have a good shot at it, which is to be able to access a lot of public cash subsidies and to forge an alliance with water districts in the North State who are interested in picking up a little cash selling water to Southern California. Sorry to be so blunt.
Nothing surprises me about when it comes to Sites Reservoir. And why don't we talk a little bit about what some of the ecological problems that a project like this would cause? Like, where are they even going to get the water? I mean, how big is Sites? From what I understand, it's like somewhere around 14,000 acres is what they want to flood, and I forget how many acre feet they plan on putting in there, but I mean, I've been out to the site where they want to build it, and it's just this beautiful valley out there. I don't know if, I'm sure you all have been out there. It's just a beautiful, it's a beautiful area.
We were just trying to post them today.
Yeah, it's a beautiful area, and just to imagine them flooding that and then turning it into just a wasteland when they're, you know, during seasons when there isn't any water to put in there, which will happen. It just doesn't seem smart to me. But you know, where's the water going to come from, and what are the ecological issues surrounding, you know, taking even more water off the river and storing it over there? What's the impacts on that land over there going to be like? And
yeah, so hi, this is Keiko here. The water would be coming from the Sacramento River to fill Sites Reservoir, which maximum storage capacity is 1.5 million acre feet. There's a laundry list of problems with it. I think the first is one, it sounds like you've heard, that it's a boondoggle. And in an average year, it is only estimated to add less than 1% to the state's water supply. And in bad years, a tenth of that. It would take, you know, there's this false idea that it would just shave off flood flows and therefore maybe not have environmental impacts. But the truth is, to fill the reservoir, it would take 6 months of pumping 24/7 from the Sacramento River. And at certain pumping locations, at certain times, that could take up to 30% of the flow of the river.
Can I ask a quick question to that? Do you think that they would be building new pumps, or would they use existing canals and diversions to fill sites?
So they used the Hamakaloosa Canal and the Glen Colusa Irrigation District Canal.
That's what I figured.
One's federal and one's, you know, GCID's canal. Big canals that snake along the west side of the Sacramento Valley. And then it'd be a dual-use thing. You know, when the canals aren't being used to deliver irrigation water, they'd pump water. They'd have to install new pumps, pump water actually into a forebay, and then lift it up to the reservoir, and, you know, do what they can to put water in the project. So yeah, they need to build some new stuff to do that. In order to make deliveries, they release water from the reservoir, and the water is mostly thought that it's going to be delivered into the Colusa Basin, and then from there down the Sacramento River and into the brand spanking new Delta Tunnel and into the Delta pumps, and then sucked into the maw of Southern California water interests.
I mean, would they just essentially build another canal or a pipeline from, like, through Maxwell and along the Maxwell-Colusa Road there, right out to the river in Colusa, to get water back into the river?
The project has been right-sized so that diversion structures only rely on those two big existing canals.
Well, I mean, to get the water back into the river.
Oh, yeah, right. They would be, there's a connection to the Sacramento and a connection to the Sacramento essentially through the Colusa Basin and the Yolo Basin. And they would be making deliveries through those sources and into the areas that would get water. The people who are paying for space in the reservoir on speculation that there will be water there will be Southern California water interests.
Right. But
there will be some water delivered to wildlife refuges and used to support, whether or not it works or not, Delta Snow.
Right. Okay, so Keiko, why don't we get back to that laundry list?
Absolutely. So it will have water quality impacts, including increasing levels of mercury, both in the reservoir and downstream of the reservoir. There's going to be a no fishing ban in the reservoir for a minimum of 10 years because of the increasing mercury. And also it will have toxic algae blooms both in the reservoir and downstream of the reservoir from reduced flows and also the reservoir leaking harmful algae blooms. And one of the issues there is that to manage for either of those kind of conflicts with the other. To manage for mercury, they could take water from higher in the reservoir, but if there's algae there, that's where the algae is. That's kind of a puzzle to us. It's also going to have pretty serious greenhouse gas emissions, basically the equivalent of putting more than 80,000 cars on the road each year. And as you said, it's going to destroy wildlife habitat locally by flooding 14,000 acres, some of which are wetlands, and then also habitat issues downstream by changing flows, specifically some consequences to riparian habitat and marsh habitat throughout the Delta and Bay. Again, that's through reduced flows. And then it's going to impact just a suite of native and endangered species, including bald eagle, burrowing owl, Chinook salmon, sturgeon, giant garter snake, Delta snout, just the typical ones that we talk about a lot here in California.
So this is Jan, and I'll just add a few comments on sort of the basic hydrology. So as Ron and Keiko said, the reservoir holds 1.5 million acre feet, but the expected average inflow by the sites authority is like 275,000 acre feet, which is way, way, way smaller. So the people that want to build a reservoir are required to do a water availability analysis because they want to know how much water is actually going to come flowing down the Sacramento River that they could have water rights to put into this reservoir. So depending on one's assumptions about climate change, that number, that 275,000 acre foot number, some people think it's higher, optimistic people. Some people with more stringent climate change assumptions think it's even lower. And so there's serious questions about the amount of water that will actually be available for this reservoir. So given that, as Keiko mentioned, there's this idea that, well, you know, there's atmospheric rivers and we're only going to take water when it's in surplus. Those time periods are relatively short. And given the size or given the volume that can be pumped into the reservoir in a 24-hour period, it is literally not possible to fill the reservoir substantially during those periods of surplus. Just the math doesn't work. So there's serious concerns about just the practicality of building this thing and the amount of water that can actually be stored in it.
There's a tension there. From the standpoint of the Sites Authority, which wants to pick up some cash selling water to Southern California, and, you know, the Southern California, the bean counters in the corporate offices in Southern California have to figure out how much water are we going to get. And the more restrictive, or put it another way, the more protective the conditions are to protect the Sacramento River from being adversely impacted, or at least the impacts reduced to a tolerable level in the eyes of some, the more protective the conditions are on diversions, the less water that can be scooped into the reservoir, pumped into the reservoir, and delivered for downstream sales. So, you know, we haven't talked about this yet, but one of the key forums that theoretically should make wise decisions that protect our resources would be the water rights process at the State Water Resources Control Board. And Friends of the River and a group of other NGOs, you know, are part of we intend to be and already are part of that protest process. And, you know, we expect that it will be a difficult forum because, you know, if you're a bean counter at the authority or in Southern California, you want conditions on diversions to be as lenient as possible. And our perspective is, well, yeah, you shouldn't build a dam, but if you're going to build it, you better not mess up the Sacramento River needlessly, or even at all, for that matter. And so, you know, we would argue that you need to be really protective. And if it turns out that you can't make money on the project, if you do that, well, it's always been a deadbeat dam. You know, that's not news. Unfortunately, that is news to a lot of politicians in the state.
Right. Yeah, that kind of brings me to the next question. If they're putting all their own money into it, then I could see where it might potentially not be profitable to them, at least in the short term, on the sales that they get from the water. But who is actually paying for it? I mean, you said you mentioned how they figured out this little way to use public money to get some of this funded. So who is essentially going to take on most of the financial burden of this project?
So Jan has been doing some of the bean counter, but we're trying to save her voice this evening. So let me just note that there's about $900 million, close to $1 billion, that have been set aside, allocated from California taxpayers. There's the Sites Authority expects, hopes, believes that they're going to get 25% of project costs, which would be roughly $1 billion of free money, federal taxpayer money. They're hoping to get a plus $2 billion low-interest loan from the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, of all places. And they've already arranged for a $450 million loan that was offered to them by the United States Department of Agriculture, mm-hmm, under the Trump administration. And then the beneficiaries of the project are the people who are hoping that the space that they are signing up for will deliver them water. those folks will pay part of the capital cost of the project. So, you know, there's a lot of public money that's been set aside either as grants or low interest loans for this project, and that's the way you make a deadbeat dam, you know, a dam that's not cost effective, pencil out financially.
And just as a detail to add to Ron's great description, the subscribers, the investors who buy space, will have the ability to scalp water during a drought for high prices. So we know water can go from anywhere from $100 an acre foot to over $1,000 an acre foot, depending on the market. So that's an explicit strategy that that investing in the site project offers to the subscribers, that they can do that.
Wow, $1,000 for a football field's worth of water. Because essentially an acre foot is a football field with a foot of water on it.
Correct.
So, yeah. Let's talk about the EIS a little bit on this project. I've heard a lot of different things about, you know, they've had that, they've reintroduced that EIS a few different times. Am I correct on that? And I remember reading just probably 8 years ago, maybe, how they're, an EIS at that point wasn't accepted because they couldn't guarantee enough recreational opportunities on the lake or something like that. The state didn't accept their EIS because of
that.
I
may be the one who remembers the history on this. The first, this project was first conceived of in its modern incarnation, in around 2000 in the late 90s. And the project sponsor at the time was the Department of Water Resources. Mm-hmm. And most of the subscribers to the project are customers of the State Water Project, which the Department of Water Resources manages. So that was their project. And they advanced they spent a lot of time trying to figure out how to get a EIR moving on a project that, you know, has its issues. And they advanced to the point of having what's called administrative draft EIR, more than 10 years ago now. And it's at a stage where they're sharing it with other government agencies, not sharing it with the public yet. BWR was gracious, though. They shared it with the public, but that's as far as it got. And they basically said, we're not going to be the project sponsor. We're going to wait for some locals to be the project sponsor, thus the creation of the site's reservoir authority. And that's essentially an amalgamation of mostly Sacramento Valley West Side water districts that agreed to take over project sponsorship. And so they advanced an EIR that was time to try and get them access to $900 million of state taxpayer funds. And then they realized, we rushed this EIR. It's not ready for prime time. And so, and they redesigned the project, made it cheaper, and so the modern incarnation of the EIR, which has just been certified and which lawsuits have been filed on, is there. The site's authority's second try. The federal government has only done one environmental impact statement that I can remember. Oh, no. It's a draft EIS that who cares about the federal government? Sorry. Anyhow, they just finalized their EIS, which I think was a supplemental, their second whack at the story, and it was released with the EIR from the Sites Authority. In fact, it's one document. It's a joint EIR-EIS. And so, essentially, there's been three tries at this, environmental reviews, and now this one's ready, and it's been finalized and certified by the governing authority. The feds haven't completed their final process, but I don't know any reason why they're not going to finish that process. And so the question now is there going to be litigation? And litigation has already been initiated. And I don't know, Keiko, you want to tell the story of what happened in the legislature this year to streamline things?
Oh, goodness.
Make it simple.
The simplest version is there was a trailer bill proposed by Governor Newsom to basically streamline CEQA litigation and shorten the timeline. So that's these environmental documents we're talking about, shortening the amount of time that case would take. And so that legislation went through, and the Sites Authority applied for it very quickly, and Governor Newsom certified their application about 15 days later. So the Sites Authority qualifies for this streamlined litigation timeline.
Which is 270 days, to be precise.
Well, yeah, so they just really slid it right through. Seems
this,
like
this project has powerful patrons,
right? Oh yeah, yeah. The more the bigger water districts that get involved, yeah. The more money that is stands to be made. What's that?
All subsidized by the taxpayers.
Right, right. Yeah. Well, that's the whole thing. You know, we pay for a bulk of it, and then they make money on it. And we pay for it.
Isn't America wonderful?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's just like any industry. It's all taxpayer subsidized. That brings me to, you talked about some litigation. You know, what's being done? How can we stop this short of, and I want to ask, is there any plans for anybody to chain themselves to a rock this time?
Those plans aren't announced ahead of time.
You don't have to announce that on the radio, actually, so that...
So, actually, just quickly, obviously there's lawsuits that have been filed to challenge the environmental document. And also, what could be the... whether or not the financing actually collapses, you know, these big loans, like the $2 billion EPA loan, if that doesn't come in, they may have trouble. But there's also the water rights proceeding. So we've got these two decision-making forums that are have just been initiated. And, you know, that's where, other than the financing falling through, what the court says about the environmental document and what the water board says about what kind of water right could be issued and still be protective of resources that the water board feels they have to protect. Those are the key things in front of us. And, you know, there's some groups who are going to be working hard on that. What can you do? You can talk to your politicians. You can, you know, contribute some dollars to the environmental groups and, you know, who are having to pay attorneys and running up bills on you know, for you.
Well,
Dan's got some thoughts.
It seems to me like, I mean, we have salmon that are on the, you know, on the endangered list and protected species lists. Isn't there litigation that can be made to protect them by not taking more water out of the river like that?
Absolutely, and that litigation is underway and has been filed. Friends of the River is not in front of the endangered species litigation to protect fish and salmon, but there are some very important lawsuits that are in play. And I guess just
associated with the Sacramento River watershed, not sites specifically.
Right. But right. Just to add to what Ron said, I mean, creating change in California water, it's a three-legged stool. It's policy and regulation. So that's the EIR comments, the water board protesting the water rights. It's litigation, because we want to hold those who are accountable to the law. The regulatory fight is often holding those who are accountable to the science. And then there's what the public actually wants. And we all know that social change happens when values change. And so what you're doing is actually one of the most important things, which is helping people to be informed about these issues. I think 2 years ago, if you would have asked any progressive Democrat on the street if we should dig more holes to capture water in case we need it during drought, they would have all said yes. And it's been over the past, you know, 24 to 18 months that people have become more aware of the environmental cost of these kinds of projects and the you know, the lack of effectiveness. You know, everybody's for water security, everybody's for food security, and these projects just aren't going to bring that. So educating the public, changing hearts and minds, I think is absolutely one of the most important parts of that three-legged stool.
Yeah, I agree, and that's one of the reasons why I started this program about a year and a half ago. We're like 2 minutes away from the end of the show here, so I want to give you just, you know, a brief, what would you want people to know in a couple sentences about the Delta Tunnel project? And, you know, at the beginning of the show, before I got you on, I read a press release that, an article that Dan Bakker just put out on Daily KO's about, I guess, the final report was finally published by the state of the fall trawl of the Sacramento San Joaquin Delta. And for the sixth year in a row, there were no Delta smelt found. And so what would you want people to know about the Delta Tunnel project?
I think there's too much to say in a minute or two.
That's fair enough. And we'll have to have you back on the show.
One thing I'd like to say, though, is particularly if you're listening to this in Chico, the Delta Tunnel project is in effect a superhighway to be able to, you know, access North State water and bring it to the South State. And, you know, there's not that much surplus water, and the water that's that you might be able to snag for the South State is, it comes with environmental costs, and so often big ones. So do you really, in the North State want to support projects to take water that